As soon as my feet were past the treacherous stairs, I was looking for him. For a brief second, I was distracted by the profusion of white blossoms that hung in garlands from everything in the room that wasn't alive, dripping with long lines of white gossamer ribbons. But I tore my eyes from the bowery canopy and searched across the rows of satin-draped chairs, blushing more deeply as I took in the crowd of faces all focused on me, until I found him at last, standing before an arch overflowing with more flowers, more gossamer. I was barely conscious that Carlyle stood by his side, and Angela's father behind them both. I didn't see my mother, where she must have been sitting in the front row, or my new family, or any of the guests. They would have to wait till later. All I really saw was Edward's face. It filled my vision and overwhelmed my mind. His eyes were a buttery, burning gold. His perfect face was almost severe with the depth of his emotion. And then, as he met my awed gaze, he broke into a breathtaking smile of exultation. Suddenly, it was only the pressure of Charlie's hand on mine that kept me from sprinting headlong down the aisle. The march was too slow, as I struggled to pace my steps to its rhythm. Mercifully, the aisle was very short. And then at last, I was there. Edward held out his hand. Charlie took my hand and, in a symbol as old as the world, placed it in Edward's. I touched the cool miracle of his skin, and I was home. Our vows were the simple traditional words that had been spoken a million times, though never by a couple quite like us. We'd asked Mr. Weber to make only one small change. He obligingly traded the line, "Till death do us part," for the more appropriate, "As long as we both shall live." In that moment, as the minister said his part, my world, which had been upside down for so long now, seemed to settle into its proper position. I saw just how silly I'd been for fearing this, as if it were an unwanted birthday gift or an embarrassing exhibition like the prom. I looked into Edward's shining, triumphant eyes and knew that I was winning too, because nothing else mattered but that I could stay with him. I didn't realize I was crying until it was time to say the binding words. "I do," I managed to choke out in a nearly unintelligible whisper, blinking my eyes clear so I could see his face. When it was his turn to speak, the words rang clear and victorious. "I do," he vowed. Mr. Weber declared us husband and wife, and then Edward's hands reached up to cradle my face, carefully, as if it were as delicate as the white petals swaying above our heads. I tried to comprehend, through the film of tears blinding me, the surreal fact that this amazing person was mine. His golden eyes looked as if they would have tears too, if such a thing were not impossible. He bent his head toward mine, and I stretched up on the tips of my toes, throwing my arms, bouquet and all, around his neck. He kissed me tenderly, adoringly. I forgot the crowd, the place, the time, the reason, only remembering that he loved me, that he wanted me, that I was his. He began the kiss, and he had to end it. I clung to him, ignoring the titters and the throat clearing in the audience. Finally, his hands restrained my face and he pulled back, too soon, to look at me. On the surface, his sudden smile was amused, almost a smirk. But underneath his momentary entertainment at my public exhibition was a deep joy that echoed my own. The crowd erupted into applause, and he turned our bodies to face our friends and family. I couldn't look away from his face to see them. My mother's arms were the first to find me, her tear-streaked face the first thing I saw when I finally tore my eyes unwillingly from Edward. And then I was handed through the crowd, passed from embrace to embrace, only vaguely aware of who held me, my attention centered on Edward's hand clutched tightly in my own. I did recognize the difference between the soft, warm hugs of my human friends and the gentle, cool embraces of my new family. One scorching hug stood out from all the others. Seth Clearwater had braved the throng of vampires to stand in for my lost werewolf friend. Chapter 4. Gesture. The wedding flowed into the reception party smoothly, proof of Alice's flawless planning. It was just twilight over the river. The ceremony had lasted exactly the right amount of time, allowing the sun to set behind the trees. The lights in the trees glimmered as Edward led me through the glass back doors, making the white flowers glow. There were another 10,000 flowers out here, serving as a fragrant, airy tent over the dance floor set up on the grass under two of the ancient cedars. Things slowed down, relaxed as the mellow August evening surrounded us. The little crowd spread out under the soft shine of the twinkle lights, and we were greeted again by the friends we'd just embraced. There was time to talk now, to laugh. "Congrats, guys," Seth Clearwater told us, ducking his head under the edge of a flower garland. His mother, Sue, was tight by his side, eyeing the guests with wary intensity. Her face was thin and fierce, an expression that was accented by her short, severe hairstyle. It was as short as her daughter Leah's. I wondered if she'd cut it the same way in a show of solidarity. Billy Black, on Seth's other side, was not as tense as Sue. When I looked at Jacob's father, I always felt like I was seeing two people rather than just one. There was the old man in the wheelchair with the lined face and the white smile that everyone else saw. And then there was the direct descendant of a long line of powerful, magical chieftains, cloaked in the authority he'd been born with. Though the magic had, in the absence of a catalyst, skipped his generation, Billy was still a part of the power and the legend. It flowed to his son, the heir to the magic, who had turned his back on it. That left Sam Yulee to act as the chief of legends and magic now. Billy seemed oddly at ease considering the company and the event. His black eyes sparkled like he'd just gotten some good news. I was impressed by his composure. This wedding must have seemed a very bad thing, the worst thing that could happen to his best friend's daughter in Billy's eyes. I knew it wasn't easy for him to restrain his feelings, considering the challenge this event foreshadowed to the ancient treaty between the Cullens and the Quileutes, the treaty that prohibited the Cullens from ever creating another vampire. The wolves knew a breach was coming, but the Cullens had no idea how they would react. Before the alliance, it would have meant an immediate attack, a war. But now that they knew each other better, would there be forgiveness instead? As if in response to that thought, Seth leaned toward Edward, arms extended. Edward returned the hug with his free arm. I saw Sue shudder delicately. "It's good to see things work out for you, man," Seth said. "I'm happy for you." "Thank you, Seth. That means a lot to me." Edward pulled away from Seth and looked at Sue and Billy. "Thank you as well, for letting Seth come, for supporting Bella today." "You're welcome," Billy said in his deep, gravelly voice, and I was surprised at the optimism in his tone. Perhaps a stronger truce was on the horizon. A bit of a line was forming, so Seth waved goodbye and wheeled Billy toward the food. Sue kept one hand on each of them. Angela and Ben were the next to claim us, followed by Angela's parents, and then Mike and Jessica, who were, to my surprise, holding hands. I hadn't heard that they were together again. That was nice. Behind my human friends were my new cousins-in-law, the Denali Vampire Clan. I realized I was holding my breath as the vampire in front, Tanya, I assumed from the strawberry tint in her blonde curls, reached out to embrace Edward. Next to her, three other vampires with golden eyes stared at me with open curiosity. One woman had long, pale blonde hair, straight as corn silk. The other woman and the man beside her were both black-haired, with a hint of an olive tone to their chalky complexions. And they were all four so beautiful that it made my stomach hurt. Tanya was still holding Edward. "Ah, Edward," she said. "I've missed you." Edward chuckled and deftly maneuvered out of the hug, placing his hand lightly on her shoulder and stepping back, as if to get a better look at her. It's been too long, Tanya. You look well. So do you. Let me introduce you to my wife. It was the first time Edward had said that word since it was officially true. He seemed like he would explode with satisfaction saying it now. The Denalis all laughed lightly in response. Tanya, this is my Bella. Tanya was every bit as lovely as my worst nightmares had predicted. She eyed me with a look that was much more speculative than it was resigned, and then reached out to take my hand. Welcome to the family, Bella. She smiled, a little rueful. We consider ourselves Carla's extended family, and I am sorry about the, recent incident when we did not behave as such. We should have met you sooner. Can you forgive us? Of course, I said breathlessly. It's so nice to meet you. The Cullens are all evened up in numbers now. Perhaps it will be our turn next, eh, Kate? She grinned at the blonde. Keep the dream alive, Kate said with a roll of her golden eyes. She took my hand from Tanya's and squeezed it gently. Welcome, Bella. The dark-haired woman put her hand on top of Kate's. I'm Carmen. This is Eleazar. We're also very pleased to finally meet you. Me too, I stuttered. Tanya glanced at the people waiting behind her. Charlie's deputy, Mark, and his wife. Their eyes were huge as they took in the Denali clan. We'll get to know each other later. We'll have eons of time for that. Tanya laughed as she and her family moved on. All the standard traditions were kept. I was blinded by flashbulbs as we held the knife over a spectacular cake. Too grand, I thought, for a relatively intimate group of friends and family. We took turns shoving cake in each other's faces. Edward manfully swallowed his portion as I watched in disbelief. I threw my bouquet with atypical skill right into Angela's surprised hands. Emmett and Jasper howled with laughter at my blush, while Edward removed my borrowed garter, which I'd shimmied down nearly to my ankle, very carefully with his teeth. With a quick wink at me, he shot it straight into Mike Newton's face. And when the music started, Edward pulled me into his arms for the customary first dance. I went willingly, despite my fear of dancing, especially dancing in front of an audience, just happy to have him holding me. He did all the work, and I twirled effortlessly under the glow of a canopy of lights and the bright flashes from the cameras. Enjoying the party, Mrs. Cullen? He whispered in my ear. I laughed. That will take a while to get used to. We have a while, he reminded me, his voice exultant, and he leaned down to kiss me while we danced. Cameras clicked feverishly. The music changed, and Charlie tapped on Edward's shoulder. It wasn't nearly as easy to dance with Charlie. He was no better at it than I was, so we moved safely from side to side in a tiny square formation. Edward and Esme spun around us like Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. I'm going to miss you at home, Bella. I'm already lonely. I spoke through a tight throat, trying to make a joke of it. I feel just horrible leaving you to cook for yourself. It's practically criminal negligence. You could arrest me. He grinned. I suppose I'll survive the food. Just call me whenever you can. I promise. It seemed like I danced with everyone. It was good to see all my old friends, but I really wanted to be with Edward more than anything else. I was happy when he finally cut in, just half a minute after a new dance started. Still not that fond of Mike, eh? I commented as Edward whirled me away from him. Not when I have to listen to his thoughts. He's lucky I didn't kick him out. Or worse. Yeah, right. Have you had a chance to look at yourself? No, I guess not. Why? Then I suppose you don't realize how utterly, heartbreakingly beautiful you are tonight. I'm not surprised Mike's having difficulty with improper thoughts about a married woman. I am disappointed that Alice didn't make sure you were forced to look in a mirror. You are very biased, you know. He sighed and then paused and turned me around to face the house. The wall of glass reflected the party back like a long mirror. Edward pointed to the couple in the mirror directly across from us. Biased, am I? I caught just a glimpse of Edward's reflection, a perfect duplicate of his perfect face, with a dark-haired beauty at his side. Her skin was cream and roses, her eyes were huge with excitement and framed with thick lashes. The narrow sheath of the shimmering white dress flared out subtly at the train, almost like an inverted calla lily, cut so skillfully that her body looked elegant and graceful, while it was motionless at least. Before I could blink and make the beauty turn back into me, Edward suddenly stiffened and turned automatically in the other direction, as if someone had called his name. "Oh," he said. His brow furrowed for an instant and then smoothed out just as quickly. Suddenly, he was smiling a brilliant smile. "What is it?" I asked. "A surprise wedding gift." "Huh?" He didn't answer. He just started dancing again, spinning me the opposite way we'd been headed before, away from the lights, and then into the deep swath of night that ringed the luminous dance floor. He didn't pause until we reached the dark side of one of the huge cedars. Then Edward looked straight into the blackest shadow. "Thank you," Edward said to the darkness. "This is very kind of you." "Kind is my middle name," a husky, familiar voice answered from the black night. "Can I cut in?" My hand flew up to my throat, and if Edward hadn't been holding me, I would have collapsed. "Jacob," I choked as soon as I could breathe. "Jacob." "Hey there, Bells." I stumbled toward the sound of his voice. Edward kept his grip under my elbow until another set of strong hands caught me in the darkness. The heat from Jacob's skin burned right through the thin satin dress as he pulled me close. He made no effort to dance. He just hugged me while I buried my face in his chest. He leaned down to press his cheek to the top of my head. "Rosalie won't forgive me if she doesn't get her official turn on the dance floor," Edward murmured, and I knew he was leaving us, giving me a gift of his own, this moment with Jacob. "Oh, Jacob." I was crying now. I couldn't get the words out clearly. "Thank you."
"Stop blubbering, Bella. You'll ruin your dress." "It's just me."
"Just? Oh, Jake, everything is perfect now," he snorted.
"Yeah, the party can start. The best man finally made it. Now everyone I love is here."
I felt his lips brush my hair.
"Sorry I'm late, honey."
"I'm just so happy you came."
"That was the idea."
I glanced toward the guests, but I couldn't see through the dancers to the spot where I'd last seen Jacob's father. I didn't know if he'd stayed. "Does Billy know you're here?" As soon as I asked, I knew that he must have. It was the only way to explain his uplifted expression before.
"I'm sure Sam's told him. I'll go see him when
the party's over." "He'll be so glad you're home." Jacob pulled back a little bit and straightened up. He left one hand on the small of my back and grabbed my right hand with the other. He cradled our hands to his chest. I could feel his heartbeat under my palm, and I guessed that he hadn't placed my hand there accidentally.
"I don't know if I get more than just this one dance," he said,
and he began pulling me around in a slow circle that didn't match the tempo of the music coming from behind us.
"I'd better make the best of it."
We moved to the rhythm of his heart under my hand.
"I'm glad I came," Jacob said quietly after a moment. "I didn't think I would be, but it's good to see you.
One more time.
Not as sad as I thought it would be."
"I don't want you to feel sad."
"I know that. And I didn't come tonight to make you feel guilty."
"No, it makes me very happy that you came. It's the best gift you could have given me." He laughed.
"That's good, because I didn't have time to stop for a real present."
My eyes were adjusting and I could see his face now, higher up than I expected. Was it possible that he was still growing? He had to be closer to 7 feet than to 6. It was a relief to see his familiar features again after all this time, his deep-set eyes shadowed under his shaggy black brows, his high cheekbones, his full lips stretched over his bright teeth
and the sarcastic smile that matched his tone. His eyes were tight around the edges, careful. I could see that he was being very careful tonight. He was doing all he could to make me happy, to not slip and show how much this cost him. I'd never done anything good enough to deserve a friend like Jacob. When did you decide to come back? Consciously or subconsciously? He took a deep breath before he answered his own question. I don't really know. I guess I've been wandering back this direction for a while, and maybe it's because I was headed here. But it wasn't until this morning that I really started running. I didn't know if I could make it. He laughed. You wouldn't believe how weird this feels, walking around on two legs again, and clothes. And then it's more bizarre because it feels weird. I didn't expect that. I'm out of practice with the whole human thing. We revolved steadily. It would have been a shame to miss seeing you like this, though. That's worth the trip right there. You look unbelievable, Bella. So beautiful. Alice invested a lot of time in me today. The dark helps, too. It's not so dark for me, you know. Right. Werewolf senses. It was easy to forget all the things he could do. He seemed so human, especially right now. You cut your hair, I noted. Yeah, easier, you know. Thought I'd better take advantage of the hands. It looks good, I lied. He snorted. Right. I did it myself with rusty kitchen shears. He grinned widely for a moment, and then his smile faded. His expression turned serious. Are you happy, Bella? Yes. Okay. I felt his shoulder shrug. That's the main thing, I guess. How are you, Jacob? Really? I'm fine, Bella, really. You don't need to worry about me anymore. You can stop bugging Seth. I'm not just bugging him because of you. I like Seth. He's a good kid, better company than some. I tell you, if I could get rid of the voices in my head, being a wolf would be about perfect. I laughed at the way it sounded. Yeah, I can't get mine to shut up either. In your case, that would mean you're insane. Of course, I already knew that you were insane, he teased. Thanks. Insanity is probably easier than sharing a pack mind. Crazy people's voices don't send babysitters to watch them. Huh? Sam's out there, and some of the others. Just in case, you know. In case of what? In case I can't keep it together. Something like that. In case I decide to trash the party. He flashed a quick smile at what was probably an appealing thought to him. But I'm not here to ruin your wedding, Bella. I'm here to... He trailed off. To make it perfect? That's a tall order. Good thing you're so tall. He groaned at my bad joke and then sighed. I'm just here to be your friend, your best friend. One last time. Sam should give you more credit. Well, maybe I'm being oversensitive. Maybe they'd be here anyway to keep an eye on Seth. There are a lot of vampires here. Seth doesn't take that as seriously as he should. Seth knows that he's not in any danger. He understands the Cullens better than Sam does. Sure, sure, Jacob said, making peace before it could turn into a fight. It was strange to have him being the diplomat. Sorry about those voices, I said. Wish I could make it better. In so many ways. It's not that bad. I'm just whining a little. You're happy? Close enough. But enough about me. You're the star today, he chuckled. I bet you're just loving that, center of attention. Yeah, can't get enough attention. He laughed and then stared over my head. With pursed lips, he studied the shimmering glow of the reception party, the graceful whirl of the dancers, the fluttering petals falling from the garlands. I looked with him. It all seemed very distant from this black, quiet space. Almost like watching the white flurries swirling inside a snow globe. I'll give them this much, he said. They know how to throw a party. Alice is an unstoppable force of nature. He sighed. Song's over. Do you think I get another one? Or is that asking too much? I tightened my hand around his. You can have as many dances as you want. He laughed. That would be interesting. I think I'd better stick with two, though. Don't want to start talk.
We turned in another circle.
You'd think I'd be used to telling you goodbye by now, he murmured.
I tried to swallow the lump in my throat, but I couldn't force it down. Jacob looked at me and frowned. He wiped his fingers across my cheek, catching the tears there.
You're not supposed to be the one crying, Bella.
Everyone cries at weddings, I said thickly.
This is what you want, right?
Right.
Then smile.
I tried. He laughed at my grimace.
I'm going to try to remember you like this. Pretend that...
That what? That I died? He clenched his teeth. He was struggling with himself, with his decision to make his presence here a gift and not a judgment. I could guess what he wanted to say.
No, he finally answered. But I'll see you this way in my head. Pink cheeks, heartbeat, two left feet, all of that.
I deliberately stomped on his foot as hard as I could. He smiled.
That's my girl.
He started to say something else, and then snapped his mouth closed. Struggling again, teeth gritted against the words he didn't want to say. My relationship with Jacob used to be so easy, natural as breathing. But since Edward had come back into my life, it was a constant strain. Because in Jacob's eyes, by choosing Edward, I was choosing a fate that was worse than death, or at least equivalent to it.
What is it, Jake?
Just tell me. You can tell me anything.
I don't have anything to tell you.
Oh, please, spit it out.
It's true. It's not, it's a question. It's something I want you to tell me.
Ask me. He struggled for another minute and then exhaled.
I shouldn't. It doesn't matter. I'm just morbidly curious.
Because I knew him so well, I understood.
It's not tonight, Jacob, I whispered.
Jacob was even more obsessed with my humanity than Edward. He treasured every one of my heartbeats, knowing that they were numbered.
Oh, he said, trying to smother his relief. Oh.
A new song started playing, but he didn't notice the change this time.
When?
He whispered.
I don't know for sure. A week or two, maybe?
His voice changed, took on a defensive, mocking edge.
What's the holdup?
I just didn't want to spend my honeymoon writhing in pain.
You'd rather spend it how? Playing checkers? Ha ha.
Very funny.
Kidding, Bells? But honestly, I don't see the point. You can't have a real honeymoon with your vampire, so why go through the motions? Call a spade. This isn't the first time you've put this off. That's a good thing, though, he said, suddenly earnest. Don't be embarrassed about it.
I'm not putting anything off, I snapped. And yes, I can have a real honeymoon. I can do anything I want, but out. He stopped our slow circling abruptly. For a moment, I wondered if he'd finally noticed the music change, and I scrambled in my head for a way to patch up our little tiff before he said goodbye to me. We shouldn't part on this note. And then his eyes bulged wide with a strange kind of confused horror.
What? He gasped. What did you say?
About what? Jake, what's wrong?
What do you mean, have a real honeymoon? While you're still human? Are you kidding? That's a sick joke, Bella.
I glared at him.
I said butt out, Jake. This is so not your business. We shouldn't even be talking about this. It's private.
His enormous hands gripped the tops of my arms, wrapping all the way around, fingers overlapping.
Ow, Jake, let go!
He shook me.
Bella, have you lost your mind? You can't be that stupid. Tell me you're joking.
He shook me again. His hands, tight as tourniquets, were quivering, sending vibrations deep into my bones.
Jake, stop!
The darkness was suddenly very crowded.
Take your hands off her.
Edward's voice was cold as ice, sharp as razors. Behind Jacob, there was a low snarl from the black night, and then another, overlapping the first.
Jake, bro, back away, I heard Seth Clearwater urge. You're losing it.
Jacob seemed frozen as he was, his horrified eyes wide and staring.
You'll hurt her, Seth whispered. Let her go.
Now, Edward snarled.
Jacob's hands dropped to his sides, and the sudden gush of blood through my waiting veins was almost painful. Before I could register more than that, cold hands replaced the hot ones, and the air was suddenly whooshing past me. I blinked, and I was on my feet a half dozen feet away from where I'd been standing. Edward was tensed in front of me. There were two enormous wolves braced between him and Jacob, but they did not seem aggressive to me, more like they were trying to prevent the fight. And Seth, gangly 15-year-old Seth, had his long arms around Jacob's shaking body, and he was tugging him away.
If Jacob faced with Seth so close, come on, Jake, let's go. I'll kill you, Jacob said,
his voice so choked with rage that it was low as a whisper. His eyes focused on Edward burned with fury.
I'll kill you myself. I'll do it now.
He shuddered convulsively. The biggest wolf, the black one, growled sharply.
Seth, get out of the way, Edward hissed.
Seth tugged on Jacob again. Jacob was so bewildered with rage that Seth was able to yank him a few feet farther back.
Don't do it, Jake. Walk away, come on.
Sam, the bigger wolf, the black one, joined Seth then. He put his massive head against Jacob's chest and shoved. The three of them, Seth towing, Jake trembling, Sam pushing, disappeared swiftly into the darkness. The other wolf stared after them. I wasn't sure in the weak light about the color of his fur. Chocolate brown, maybe? Was it Quill, then?
I'm sorry, I whispered to the wolf.
It's all right now, Bella, Edward murmured.
The wolf looked at Edward. His gaze was not friendly. Edward gave him one cold nod. The wolf huffed and then turned to follow the others, vanishing as they had.
All right, Edward said to himself,
and then he looked at me.
Let's get back.
But Jake,
Sam has him in hand. He's gone.
Edward, I'm so sorry. I was stupid.
You did nothing wrong.
I have such a big mouth. Why would I shouldn't have let him get to me like that. What was I thinking?
Don't worry. He touched my face. We need to get back to the reception before someone notices our absence.
I shook my head, trying to reorient myself.
Before someone noticed? Had anyone missed that? Then as I thought about it, I realized the confrontation that had seemed so catastrophic to me had, in reality, been very quiet and short here in the shadows.
Give me 2 seconds, I pleaded.
My insides were chaotic with panic and grief, but that didn't matter. Only the outside mattered right now. Putting on a good show was something I knew I had to master.
My dress?
You look fine. Not a hair out of place.
I took 2 deep breaths.
Okay, let's go.
He put his arms around me and led me back to the light. When we passed under the twinkle lights, he spun me gently onto the dance floor. We melted in with the other dancers as if our dance had never been interrupted. I glanced around at the guests, but no one seemed shocked or frightened. Only the very palest faces there showed any signs of stress, and they hid it well. Jasper and Emmett were on the edge of the floor close together, and I guessed that they had been nearby during the confrontation.
Are you?
I'm fine, I promised. I can't believe I did that. What's wrong with me?
Nothing is wrong with you.
I'd been so glad to see Jacob here. I knew the sacrifice it had taken him, and then I'd ruined it, turned his gift into a disaster. I should be quarantined.
But my idiocy would not ruin anything else tonight. I would put this away, shove it in a drawer and lock it up to deal with later. There would be plenty of time to flagellate myself for this, and nothing I could do now would help.
It's over, I said. Let's not think of it again tonight.
I expected a quick agreement from Edward, but he was silent.
Edward? He closed his eyes and touched his forehead to mine. Jacob is right, he whispered. What am I thinking?
He is not. I tried to keep my face smooth for the watching crowd of friends. Jacob is way too prejudiced to see anything clearly.
He mumbled something low that sounded almost like, should let him kill me for even thinking.
Stop it, I said fiercely. I grabbed his face in my hands and waited until he opened his eyes. You and me. That's the only thing that matters. The only thing you're allowed to think about now. Do you hear me?
Yes, he sighed.
Forget Jacob came. I could do that. I would do that. For me. Promise that you'll let this go.
He stared into my eyes for a moment before answering. I promise.
Thank you, Edward. I'm not afraid.
I am, he whispered.
Don't be.
I took a deep breath and smiled.
By the way, I love you.
He smiled just a little in return.
That's why we're here.
You're monopolizing the bride, Emmett said, coming up behind Edward's shoulder. Let me dance with my little sister. This could be my last chance to make her blush.
He laughed loudly, as unaffected as he usually was by any serious atmosphere. It turned out there were actually lots of people I hadn't danced with yet, and that gave me a chance to truly compose and resolve myself. When Edward claimed me again, I found that the Jacob drawer was shut nice and tight. As he wrapped his arms around me, I was able to unearth my earlier sense of joy, my certainty that everything in my life was in the right place tonight. I smiled and laid my head against his chest. His arms tightened.
I could get used to this, I said.
Don't tell me you've gotten over your dancing issues.
Dancing isn't so bad, with you.
But I was thinking more of this,
and I pressed myself to him even tighter. Of never having to let you go.
Never, he promised, and he leaned down to kiss me. It was a serious kind of kiss, intense, slow but building.
I'd pretty much forgotten where I was when I heard Alice call,
Bella, it's time.
I felt a brief flicker of irritation with my new sister for the interruption. Edward ignored her. His lips were hard against mine, more urgent than before. My heart broke into a sprint and my palms were slick against his marble neck.
Do you want to miss your plane? Alice demanded, right next to me now. I'm sure you'll have a lovely honeymoon camped out in the airport, waiting for another flight.
Edward turned his face slightly to murmur,
Go away, Alice.
And then pressed his lips to mine again.
Bella, do you want to wear that dress on the airplane? She demanded.
I wasn't really paying much attention. At the moment, I simply didn't care.
Alice growled quietly. I'll tell her where you're taking her, Edward. So help me, I will.
He froze. Then he lifted his face from mine and glared at his favorite sister.
You're awfully small to be so hugely irritating.
I didn't pick out the perfect going-away dress to have it wasted, she snapped back, taking my hand. Come with me, Bella.
I tugged against her hold, stretching up on my toes to kiss him one more time. She jerked my arm impatiently, hauling me away from him. There were a few chuckles from the watching guests. I gave up then and let her lead me into the empty house. She looked annoyed. Sorry, Alice, I apologized.
I don't blame you, Bella, she sighed. You don't seem to be able to help yourself.
I giggled at her martyred expression and she scowled.
Thank you, Alice. It was the most beautiful wedding anyone ever had, I told her earnestly. Everything was exactly right. You're the best, smartest, most talented sister in the whole world.
That thawed her out. She smiled a huge smile.
I'm glad you liked it.
Renee and Esme were waiting upstairs. The three of them quickly had me out of my dress and into Alice's deep blue going-away ensemble. I was grateful when someone pulled the pins out of my hair and let it fall loose down my back, wavy from the braids, saving me from a hairpin headache later.
My mother's tears streamed without a break the entire time. "I'll call you when I know where I'm going," I promised as I hugged her goodbye. I knew the honeymoon secret was probably driving her crazy. My mother hated secrets, unless she was in on them.
"I'll tell you as soon as she's safely away," Alice outdid me, smirking at my wounded expression. How unfair for me to be the last to know.
"You have to visit me and Phil very, very soon. It's your turn to go south. See the sun for once," Renee said.
"It didn't rain today," I reminded her, avoiding her request.
"A miracle."
"Everything's ready," Alice said. "Your suitcases are in the car. Jasper's bringing it around."
She pulled me back toward the stairs with Renee following, still halfway embracing me.
"I love you, Mom," I whispered as we descended.
"I'm so glad you have Phil. Take care of each other."
"I love you too, Bella, honey."
"Goodbye, Mom. I love you," I said again, my throat thick. Edward was waiting at the bottom of the stairs. I took his outstretched hand but leaned away, scanning the little crowd that was waiting to see us off.
"Dad?"
I asked, my eyes searching.
"Over here," Edward murmured. He pulled me through the guests. They made a pathway for us.
We found Charlie leaning awkwardly against the wall behind everyone else, looking a little like he was hiding. The red rims around his eyes explained why.
"Oh, Dad."
I hugged him around the waist, tears streaming again. I was crying so much tonight. He patted my back.
"There now. You don't want to miss your plane."
It was hard to talk about love with Charlie. We were so much alike, always reverting to trivial things to avoid embarrassing emotional displays. But this was no time for being self-conscious.
"I love you forever, Dad," I told him. "Don't forget that."
"You too, Bells. Always have, always will."
I kissed his cheek at the same time that he kissed mine.
"Call me," he said.
"Soon," I promised, knowing this was all I could promise. Just a phone call. My father and my mother could not be allowed to see me again. I would be too different, and much, much too dangerous.
"Go on, then," he said gruffly. "Don't want to be late."
The guests made another aisle for us. Edward pulled me close to his side as we made our escape.
"Are you ready?"
he asked. "I am," I said, and I knew that it was true. Everyone applauded when Edward kissed me on the doorstep. Then he rushed me to the car as the rice storm began. Most of it went wide, but someone, probably Emmett, threw with uncanny precision, and I caught a lot of the ricochets off Edward's back. The car was decorated with more flowers that trailed in streamers along its length, and long gossamer ribbons that were tied to a dozen shoes, designer shoes that looked brand new, dangling behind the bumper. Edward shielded me from the rice while I climbed in, and then he was in, and we were speeding away as I waved out the window and called, "I love you," to the porch where my families waved back. The last image I registered was one of my parents. Phil had both arms wrapped tenderly around Renee. She had one arm tight around his waist, but had her free hand reached out to hold Charlie's. So many different kinds of love, harmonious in this one moment. It seemed a very hopeful picture to me. Edward squeezed my hand.
"I love you," he said.
I leaned my head against his arm.
"That's why we're here," I quoted him.
He kissed my hair. As we turned onto the black highway and Edward really hit the accelerator, I heard a noise over the purr of the engine coming from the forest behind us. If I could hear it, then he certainly could. But he said nothing as the sound slowly faded in the distance. I said nothing either. The piercing, heartbroken howling grew fainter and then disappeared entirely.
Chapter 5. Isle Esme.
"Houston?" I asked, raising my eyebrows when we reached the gate in Seattle.
"Just a stop along the way," Edward assured me with a grin.
It felt like I'd barely fallen asleep when he woke me. I was groggy as he pulled me through the terminals, struggling to remember how to open my eyes after every blink. It took me a few minutes to catch up with what was going on when we stopped at the international counter to check in for our next flight.
Rio de Janeiro? I asked with slightly more trepidation. Another stop, he told me.
The flight to South America was long but comfortable in the wide first-class seat, with Edward's arms cradled around me. I slept myself out and awoke unusually alert as we circled toward the airport with the light of the setting sun slanting through the plane's windows. We didn't stay in the airport to connect with another flight as I'd expected. Instead, we took a taxi through the dark, teeming, living streets of Rio. Unable to understand a word of Edward's Portuguese instructions to the driver, I guessed that we were off to find a hotel before the next leg of our journey. A sharp twinge of something very close to stage fright twisted in the pit of my stomach as I considered that. The taxi continued through the swarming crowds until they thinned somewhat, and we appeared to be nearing the extreme western edge of the city, heading into the ocean. We stopped at the docks. Edward led the way down the long line of white yachts moored in the night-blackened water. The boat he stopped at was smaller than the others, sleeker, obviously built for speed instead of space. Still luxurious, though, and more graceful than the rest. He leaped in lightly, despite the heavy bags he carried. He dropped those on the deck and turned to help me carefully over the edge. I watched in silence while he prepared the boat for departure, surprised at how skilled and comfortable he seemed, because he'd never mentioned an interest in boating before. But then again, he was good at just about everything. As we headed due east into the open ocean, I reviewed basic geography in my head. As far as I could remember, there wasn't much east of Brazil, until you got to Africa. But Edward sped forward while the lights of Rio faded and ultimately disappeared behind us. On his face was a familiar, exhilarated smile, the one produced by any form of speed. The boat plunged through the waves and I was showered with sea spray. Finally, the curiosity I'd suppressed so long got the best of me. "Are we going much farther?" I asked. It wasn't like him to forget that I was human, but I wondered if he planned for us to live on this small craft for any length of time. "About another half hour." His eyes took in my hands, clenched on the seat, and he grinned. Oh well, I thought to myself. He was a vampire, after all. Maybe we were going to Atlantis. 20 minutes later, he called my name over the roar of the engine.
"Bella, look there."
He pointed straight ahead. I saw only blackness at first, and the moon's white trail across the water. But I searched the space where he pointed until I found a low black shape breaking into the sheen of moonlight on the waves. As I squinted into the darkness, the silhouette became more detailed. The shape grew into a squat, irregular triangle, with one side trailing longer than the other before sinking into the waves. We drew closer, and I could see the outline was feathery, swaying to the light breeze. And then my eyes refocused, and the pieces all made sense. A small island rose out of the water ahead of us, waving with palm fronds, a beach glowing pale in the light of the moon.
"Where are we?"
I murmured in wonder while he shifted course, heading around to the north end of the island. He heard me, despite the noise of the engine, and smiled a wide smile that gleamed in the moonlight.
"This is Isle Esme."
The boat slowed dramatically, drawing with precision into position against a short dock constructed of wooden planks, bleached into whiteness by the moon. The engine cut off, and the silence that followed was profound. There was nothing but the waves, slapping lightly against the boat, and the rustle of the breeze in the palms. The air was warm, moist, and fragrant, like the steam left behind after a hot shower.
"Isle Esme?"
My voice was low, but it still sounded too loud as it broke into the quiet night.
"A gift from Carlyle. Esme offered to let us borrow it."
"A gift? Who gives an island as a gift?" I frowned. I hadn't realized that Edward's extreme generosity was a learned behavior. He placed the suitcases on the dock and then turned back, smiling his perfect smile as he reached for me. Instead of taking my hand, he pulled me right up into his arms. "Aren't you supposed to wait for the threshold?" I asked, breathless as he sprung lightly out of the boat. He grinned. "I'm nothing if not thorough." Gripping the handles of both huge steamer trunks in one hand and cradling me in the other arm, he carried me up the dock and onto a pale sand pathway through the dark vegetation. For a short while, it was pitch black in the jungle-like growth, and then I could see a warm light ahead. It was about at the point when I realized the light was a house. The two bright, perfect squares were wide windows framing a front door, that the stage fright attacked again, more forcefully than before, worse than when I'd thought we were headed for a hotel. My heart thudded audibly against my ribs, and my breath seemed to get stuck in my throat. I felt Edward's eyes on my face, but I refused to meet his gaze. I stared straight ahead, seeing nothing. He didn't ask what I was thinking, which was out of character for him. I guessed that meant that he was just as nervous as I suddenly was. He set the suitcases on the deep porch to open the doors. They were unlocked. Edward looked down at me, waiting until I met his gaze before he stepped through the threshold. He carried me through the house, both of us very quiet, flipping on lights as he went. My vague impression of the house was that it was quite large for a tiny island, and oddly familiar. I'd gotten used to the pale-on-pale color scheme preferred by the Cullens. It felt like home. I couldn't focus on any specifics, though. The violent pulse beating behind my ears made everything a little blurry. Then Edward stopped and turned on the last light. The room was big and white, and the far wall was mostly glass. Standard decor for my vampires. Outside, the moon was bright on white sand, and just a few yards away from the house, glistening waves. But I barely noted that part. I was more focused on the absolutely huge white bed in the center of the room, hung with billowy clouds of mosquito netting. Edward set me on my feet. "I'll go get the luggage." The room was too warm, stuffier than the tropical night outside. A bead of sweat dewed up on the nape of my neck. I walked slowly forward until I could reach out and touch the foamy netting. For some reason, I felt the need to make sure everything was real. I didn't hear Edward return. Suddenly, his wintry finger caressed the back of my neck, wiping away the drop of perspiration. "It's a little hot here," he said apologetically. I thought that would be best. "Thorough," I murmured under my breath, and he chuckled. It was a nervous sound, rare for Edward. "I tried to think of everything that would make this easier," he admitted. I swallowed loudly, still facing away from him. Had there ever been a honeymoon like this before? I knew the answer to that. No, there had not. "I was wondering," Edward said slowly, "if, first, maybe you'd like to take a midnight swim with me." He took a deep breath, and his voice was more at ease when he spoke again. "The water will be very warm. This is the kind of beach you approve of."
"Sounds nice."
My voice broke. "I'm sure you'd like a human minute or two. It was a long journey." I nodded woodenly. I felt barely human. Maybe a few minutes alone would help. His lips brushed against my throat, just below my ear. He chuckled once, and his cool breath tickled my overheated skin. "Don't take too long, Mrs. Cullen." I jumped a little at the sound of my new name. His lips brushed down my neck to the tip of my shoulder. "I'll wait for you in the water." He walked past me to the French door that opened right onto the beach sand. On the way, he shrugged out of his shirt, dropping it on the floor, and then slipped through the door into the moonlit night. The sultry, salty air swirled into the room behind him. Did my skin burst into flames? I had to look down to check. Nope. Nothing was burning, at least not visibly. I reminded myself to breathe, and then I stumbled toward the giant suitcase that Edward had opened on top of a low white dresser. It must be mine.
because my familiar bag of toiletries was right on top. And there was a lot of pink in there, but I didn't recognize even one article of clothing. As I pawed through the neatly folded piles, looking for something familiar and comfortable, a pair of old sweats maybe, it came to my attention that there was an awful lot of sheer lace and skimpy satin in my hands. Lingerie. Very lingerie-ish lingerie, with French tags. I didn't know how or when, but someday, Alice was going to pay for this. Giving up, I went to the bathroom and peeked out through the long windows that opened to the same beach as the French doors. I couldn't see him. I guessed he was there in the water, not bothering to come up for air. In the sky above, the moon was lopsided, almost full, and the sand was bright white under its shine. A small movement caught my eye, draped over a bend in one of the palm trees that fringed the beach. The rest of his clothes were swaying in the light breeze. A rush of heat flashed across my skin again. I took a couple of deep breaths, and then went to the mirrors above the long stretch of counters. I looked exactly like I'd been sleeping on a plane all day. I found my brush and yanked it harshly through the snarls on the back of my neck until they were smoothed out, and the bristles were full of hair. I brushed my teeth meticulously twice. Then I washed my face and splashed water on the back of my neck, which was feeling feverish. That felt so good that I washed my arms as well, and finally I decided to just give up and take the shower. I knew it was ridiculous to shower before swimming, but I needed to calm down, and hot water was one reliable way to do that. Also, shaving my legs again seemed like a pretty good idea. When I was done, I grabbed a huge white towel off the counter and wrapped it under my arms. Then I was faced with a dilemma I hadn't considered. What was I supposed to put on? Not a swimsuit, obviously. But it seemed silly to put my clothes back on, too. I didn't even want to think about the things Alice had packed for me. My breathing started to accelerate again and my hands trembled. So much for the calming effects of the shower. I started to feel a little dizzy. Apparently a full-scale panic attack on the way. I sat down on the cool tile floor in my big towel and put my head between my knees. I prayed he wouldn't decide to come look for me before I could pull myself together. I could imagine what he would think if he saw me going to pieces this way. It wouldn't be hard for him to convince himself that we were making a mistake. And I wasn't freaking out because I thought we were making a mistake. Not at all. I was freaking out because I had no idea how to do this. And I was afraid to walk out of this room and face the unknown, especially in French lingerie. I knew I wasn't ready for that yet. This felt exactly like having to walk out in front of a theater full of thousands with no idea what my lines were. How did people do this? Swallow all their fears and trust someone else so implicitly, with every imperfection and fear they had, with less than the absolute commitment Edward had given me. If it weren't Edward out there, if I didn't know in every cell of my body that he loved me as much as I loved him, unconditionally and irrevocably, and to be honest, irrationally, I'd never be able to get up off this floor. But it was Edward out there. So I whispered the words, "Don't be a coward," under my breath and scrambled to my feet. I hitched the towel tighter under my arms and marched determinedly from the bathroom, past the suitcase full of lace and the big bed, without looking at either. Out the open glass door, onto the powder-fine sand. Everything was black and white, leached colorless by the moon. I walked slowly across the warm powder, pausing beside the curved tree where he had left his clothes. I laid my hand against the rough bark and checked my breathing to make sure it was even, or even enough. I looked across the low ripples, black in the darkness, searching for him. He wasn't hard to find. He stood, his back to me, waist deep in the midnight water, staring up at the oval moon. The pallid light of the moon turned his skin a perfect white, like the sand, like the moon itself, and made his wet hair black as the ocean. He was motionless, his hands resting palms down against the water. The low waves broke around him as if he were a stone. I stared at the smooth lines of his back, his shoulders, his arms, his neck,
the flawless shape of him. The fire was no longer a flash burn across my skin. It was slow and deep now. It smoldered away all my awkwardness, my shy uncertainty. I slipped the towel off without hesitation, leaving it on the tree with his clothes, and walked out into the white light. It made me pale as the snowy sand, too. I couldn't hear the sound of my footsteps as I walked to the water's edge, but I guessed that he could. Edward did not turn. I let the gentle swells break over my toes and found that he'd been right about the temperature. It was very warm, like bathwater. I stepped in, walking carefully across the invisible ocean floor, but my care was unnecessary. The sand continued perfectly smooth, sloping gently toward Edward. I waded through the weightless current till I was at his side, and then I placed my hand lightly over his cool hand, lying on the water. "Beautiful," I said, looking up at the moon too.
"It's all right," he answered, unimpressed.
He turned slowly to face me. Little waves rolled away from his movement and broke against my skin. His eyes looked silver in his ice-colored face. He twisted his hand up so that he could twine our fingers beneath the surface of the water. It was warm enough that his cool skin did not raise goosebumps on mine.
"But I wouldn't use the word beautiful," he continued.
"Not with you standing here in comparison." I half smiled, then raised my free hand. It didn't tremble now, and placed it over his heart. White on white, we matched, for once. He shuddered the tiniest bit at my warm touch. His breath came rougher now.
"I promised we would try," he whispered, suddenly tense. If I do something wrong, if I hurt you, you must tell me at once."
I nodded solemnly, keeping my eyes on his. I took another step through the waves and leaned my head against his chest.
"Don't be afraid," I murmured. "We belong together."
I was abruptly overwhelmed by the truth of my own words. This moment was so perfect, so right, there was no way to doubt it. His arms wrapped around me, holding me against him. Summer and winter. It felt like every nerve ending in my body was a live wire.
"Forever," he agreed, and then pulled us gently into deeper water.
The sun, hot on the bare skin of my back, woke me in the morning. Late morning, maybe afternoon, I wasn't sure. Everything besides the time was clear, though. I knew exactly where I was. The bright room with the big white bed, brilliant sunlight streaming through the open doors. The clouds of netting would soften the shine. I didn't open my eyes. I was too happy to change anything, no matter how small. The only sounds were the waves outside, our breathing, my heartbeat. I was comfortable even with the baking sun. His cool skin was the perfect antidote to the heat. Lying across his wintry chest, his arms wound around me, felt very easy and natural. I wondered idly what I'd been so panicky about last night. My fears all seemed silly now. His fingers softly trailed down the contours of my spine, and I knew that he knew I was awake. I kept my eyes shut and tightened my arms around his neck, holding myself closer to him. He didn't speak. His fingers moved up and down my back, barely touching it as he lightly traced patterns on my skin. I would have been happy to lie here forever, to never disturb this moment, but my body had other ideas. I laughed at my impatient stomach. Seems sort of prosaic to be hungry after all that had passed last night. Like being brought back down to earth from some great height.
"What's funny?" he murmured, still stroking my back.
The sound of his voice, serious and husky, brought with it a deluge of memories from the night, and I felt a blush color my face and neck. To answer his question, my stomach growled. I laughed again. "You just can't escape being human for very long." I waited, but he did not laugh with me. Slowly sinking through the many layers of bliss that clouded my head came the realization of a different atmosphere outside my own glowing sphere of happiness. I opened my eyes. The first thing I saw was the pale, almost silvery skin of his throat, the arc of his chin above my face. His jaw was taut. I propped myself up on my elbow so I could see his face. He was staring at the frothy canopy above us, and he didn't look at me as I studied his grave features. His expression was a shock. It sent a physical jolt through my body. "Edward," I said, a strange little catch in my throat. "What is it? What's wrong?"
"You have to ask."
His voice was hard, cynical. My first instinct, the product of a lifetime of insecurities, was to wonder what I had done wrong. I thought through everything that had happened, but I couldn't find any sour note in the memory. It had all been simpler than I'd expected. We'd fit together like corresponding pieces, made to match up. This had given me a secret satisfaction. We were compatible physically, as well as all the other ways. Fire and ice, somehow existing together without destroying each other. More proof that I belonged with him. I couldn't think of any part that would make him look like this, so severe and cold. What had I missed? His finger smoothed the worried lines on my forehead.
"What are you thinking?" he whispered.
"You're upset. I don't understand. Did I?" I couldn't finish. His eyes tightened.
"How badly are you hurt, Bella? The truth. Don't try to downplay it."
"Hurt?" I repeated. My voice came out higher than usual because the word took me so by surprise. He raised one eyebrow, his lips a tight line. I made a quick assessment, stretching my body automatically, tensing and flexing my muscles. There was stiffness, and a lot of soreness too, it was true. But mostly, there was the odd sensation that my bones all had become unhinged at the joints, and I had changed halfway into the consistency of a jellyfish. It was not an unpleasant feeling. And then I was a little angry, because he was darkening this most perfect of all mornings with his pessimistic assumptions. "Why would you jump to that conclusion? I've never been better than I am now." His eyes closed.
"Stop that."
"Stop what?"
"Stop acting like I'm not a monster for having agreed to this."
"Edward," I whispered, really upset now. He was pulling my bright memory through the darkness, staining it. "Don't ever say that." He didn't open his eyes. It was like he didn't want to see me.
"Look at yourself, Bella. Then tell me I'm not a monster."
Wounded, shocked, I followed his instruction unthinkingly and then gasped. What had happened to me? I couldn't make sense of the fluffy white snow that clung to my skin. I shook my head and a cascade of white drifted out of my hair. I pinched one soft white bit between my fingers. It was a piece of down. "Why am I covered in feathers?" I asked, confused. He exhaled impatiently.
"I bit a pillow, or two. That's not what I'm talking about."
"You bit a pillow? Why?"
"Look, Bella," he almost growled.
He took my hand, very gingerly, and stretched my arm out.
"Look at that."
This time I saw what he meant. Under the dusting of feathers, large purplish bruises were beginning to blossom across the pale skin of my arm. My eyes followed the trail they made up to my shoulder, and then down across my ribs. I pulled my hand free to poke at the discoloration on my left forearm, watching it fade where I touched and then reappear. It throbbed a little, so lightly that he was barely touching me. Edward placed his hand against the bruises on my arm, one at a time, matching his long fingers to the patterns.
"Oh,"
I said. I tried to remember this, to remember pain, but I couldn't. I couldn't recall a moment when his hold had been too tight, his hands too hard against me. I only remembered wanting him to hold me tighter, and being pleased when he did.
"I'm so sorry, Bella," he whispered while I stared at the bruises. "I knew better than this. I should not have..."
He made a low, revolted sound in the back of his throat. I am more sorry than I can tell you. He threw his arm over his face and became perfectly still. I sat for one long moment in total astonishment, trying to come to terms, now that I understood it, with his misery. It was so contrary to the way that I felt that it was difficult to process. The shock wore off slowly, leaving nothing in its absence. Emptiness. My mind was blank. I couldn't think of what to say. How could I explain it to him in the right way? How could I make him as happy as I was, or as I had been a moment ago? I touched his arm and he didn't respond. I wrapped my fingers around his wrist and tried to pry his arm off his face, but I could have been yanking on a sculpture for all the good it did me. Edward! He didn't move. Edward! Nothing. So this would be a monologue then. I'm not sorry, Edward. I can't even tell you. I'm so happy. That doesn't cover it. Don't be angry, don't. I'm really Do not say the word fine. His voice was ice cold. If you value my sanity, do not say that you are fine. But I am, I whispered. Bella, he almost moaned. Don't. No, you don't, Edward. He moved his arm. His gold eyes watched me warily. Don't ruin this, I told him. I am happy. I've already ruined this, he whispered. Cut it out, I snapped. I heard his teeth grind together. Ugh, I groaned. Why can't you just read my mind already? It's so inconvenient to be a mental mute. His eyes widened a little bit, distracted in spite of himself. That's a new one. You love that I can't read your mind. Not today. He stared at me. Why? I threw my hands up in frustration, feeling an ache in my shoulder that I ignored. My palms fell back against his chest with a sharp smack. Because all this angst would be completely unnecessary if you could see how I feel right now. Or 5 minutes ago, anyway. I was perfectly happy. Totally and completely blissed out. Now, well, I'm sort of pissed, actually. You should be angry at me. Well, I am. Does that make you feel better? He sighed. No, I don't think anything could make me feel better now. That, I snapped. That right there is why I'm angry. You are killing my buzz, Edward. He rolled his eyes and shook his head. I took a deep breath. I was feeling more of the soreness now, but it wasn't that bad. Sort of like the day after lifting weights. I'd done that with Renee during one of her fitness obsessions. 65 lunges with 10 pounds in each hand. I couldn't walk the next day. This was not as painful as that had been by half. I swallowed my irritation and tried to make my voice soothing. We knew this was going to be tricky. I thought that was assumed. And then, well, it was a lot easier than I thought it would be. And this is really nothing. I brushed my fingers along my arm. I think for a first time, not knowing what to expect, we did amazing. With a little practice. His expression was suddenly so livid that I broke off mid-sentence. Assumed? Did you expect this, Bella? Were you anticipating that I would hurt you? Were you thinking it would be worse? Do you consider the experiment a success because you can walk away from it? No broken bones? That equals a victory? I waited, letting him get it all out. Then I waited some more while his breathing went back to normal. When his eyes were calm, I answered, speaking with slow precision. I didn't know what to expect. But I definitely did not expect how just wonderful and perfect it was. My voice dropped to a whisper. My eyes slipped from his face down to my hands. I mean, I don't know how it was for you, but it was like that for me. A cool finger pulled my chin back up. Is that what you're worried about? He said through his teeth. That I didn't enjoy myself? My eyes stayed down.
I know it's not the same. You're not human. I just was trying to explain that for a human, well, I can't imagine that life gets any better than that. He was quiet for so long that, finally, I had to look up. His face was softer now, thoughtful. It seems that I have more to apologize for, he frowned. I didn't dream that you would construe the way I feel about what I did to you to mean that last night wasn't, well, the best night of my existence. But I don't want to think of it that way. Not when you were... My lips curved up a little at the edges. Really? The best ever? I asked in a small voice. He took my face between his hands, still introspective. I spoke to Carlyle after you and I made our bargain, hoping he could help me. Of course, he warned me that this would be very dangerous for you. A shadow crossed his expression. He had faith in me, though. Faith I didn't deserve. I started to protest, and he put two fingers over my lips before I could comment. I also asked him what I should expect. I didn't know what it would be for me, what with my being a vampire. He smiled half-heartedly. Carlyle told me it was a very powerful thing, like nothing else. He told me physical love was something I should not treat lightly. With our rarely changing temperaments, strong emotions can alter us in permanent ways. But he said I did not need to worry about that part. You had already altered me so completely. This time his smile was more genuine. I spoke to my brothers, too. They told me it was a very great pleasure, second only to drinking human blood. A line creased his brow. But I've tasted your blood, and there could be no blood more potent than that. I don't think they were wrong, really. Just that it was different for us. Something more. It was more. It was everything. That doesn't change the fact that it was wrong. Even if it were possible that you really did feel that way. What does that mean? Do you think I'm making this up? Why? To ease my guilt? I can't ignore the evidence, Bella, or your history of trying to let me off the hook when I make mistakes.